Okay, I'd like to call the meeting of the Carson City Open Space Advisory Committee to order. It's Monday, April 18th. I'd like to welcome those in the audience. Nice to have some folks here. We'll start tonight by having a roll call, if we could.
Chairperson Scott.
Here.
Vice Chair Welch. Here. Member Evans.
Here.
Member Fitzsimmons. Member Inverson.
Here.
Member Massad. Member Welburn.
Here.
A quorum's present.
Thank you. I had an email from Laura Fitzsimmons indicating she was in Las Vegas in depositions today and tomorrow. We're pleased to have Jerry Massad with us as our newest member, taking the place that was vacated by Howard Riedel's decision to retire and have more fun. Get married, move. Just a few other things that sound like fun. So, Howard, good to see you. We'll catch up with you a little bit more in a minute. Okay, at this time, I would call for any general public comments on items that are not part of the agenda. Please limit your any comments to 3 minutes or less, but we would welcome any public comment at this time. Anyone like to say anything? Okay, seeing none. Are there any corrections, comments on the minutes, or the minutes of our last meeting, February 22nd? Okay. Everybody comfortable with those? We have a motion to approve the minutes as presented.
I move that we approve the minutes as written.
Have a second. Thank you. Any public comment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. And do we have any modifications to the agenda?
No modifications, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Our first item tonight is to recognize the many years of service that Howard Riedel provided to the Open Space Advisory Committee. And did you have any comments you'd like to make?
For the record, and since Howard is no longer with the committee, he probably did not have a chance to review the agenda item tonight. So I would like to read it just to recognize some of Howard's accomplishments while he was with the committee. Howard served the committee since 2003. He started his tenure when the Open Space Program owned and managed just 44 acres and had one full-time employee. As a result of Howard's participation and leadership, the Open Space Program now owns slash manages more than 6,800 acres, has three full-time staff and two part-time staff. He participated in some very significant achievements, including two conservation easements, the Charette Creating a Community Vision for Silver Saddle Ranch in the Carson River, the acquisition of federal lands through the Lands Bill, the management plan for Carson City Open Space and Parks in the Carson River area, and the growth of trails and pathways in Carson City, such as the Mexican Ditch Trail Bridges, Eagle Valley Creek Bridge, and the Ash to Kings Trail. Throughout his service on the committee, Howard has been a great leader, friend, and supporter of open space. Another item I looked at in preparation of this is what happened in that first year when Howard came to us. I don't know if you recall so many things back then, but it was really still the beginnings of the open space program. Even though the ballot question passed in 1996, the open space plan in 2000, one of the following items in 2002 was the state of Nevada question one program, the resource conservation and resource protection program. So in 2003, with Bruce and Howard on the committee, that was some of the development years of that grant program. So they were helping to review some of the rules and regulations and how that grant program would be administered. And we were the lucky recipient of many grants through that program for acquisitions as well as trail projects. And in fact, later on in the agenda, there's a little bit of money left in that program, the Question One program, and we hope to receive some of that for a Carson River project. Some of the other items that started in 2003, was identifying and prioritizing some of the land acquisitions. That was the first year we started talking about the conservation easement for Horse Creek Ranch. That started in 2003, and the easement was completed in 2009. So definitely many years of work on that. So what I have this evening to present to Howard is a plaque for his time with the committee. And on this plaque is a picture of the Horse Creek Ranch, not just the meadow, but the fee title in the background. Because as far as acquisitions for our program are concerned, the fee title was the first acquisition under Howard's time with the committee. There were a couple other acquisitions that we helped to facilitate for the Forest Service and BLM, but the fee title was our first purchase for the open space program. So I'd like to present this to Howard.
Thank you, Chairman Scott, members of the Open Space Committee, and staff. Really appreciate this honor, because it's been an honor serving on the Open Space Committee. How's your sup at Horse Creek Ranch? I was trying to get all the way up to the top of Spooner, but I broke a cable. And so I was riding my bike, my mountain bike. Anyways, really honored to work with the Open Space Committee. If I were to impart any words of wisdom to the newer members, is that things take a while to do, and those are worthwhile things. And I think Horse Creek Ranch, I believe we were in negotiation on the easement agreement for almost a year, I know, if not more. In addition to that, it's just countless many other things take time because they're complex issues, and I think we need to, well, the committee, how the committee was so successful is they took their time before they went to the Board of Supervisors to make their recommendation, and I think that makes it easy for our Board of Supervisors to take action when they know that there's been so much research, things have looked over well, and they're worthwhile. So with that, I'm just really pleased to receive this honor. And Bruce Scott is right. I am retiring from my job down in Reno, and I'm looking forward to seeing family more, and wanted to make my life a little less complicated and see some Monday night football during the winter. So anyways, thank you very much for the honor.
Howard, thank you. Thank you so much for all your help and counsel. I'm going to miss having you as an engineer to see logically and put things in the right framework. Sometimes, you know, that's hard for non-engineers, but it's a pleasure to have worked with you, and thank you so much for your service to the committee and to the community. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, can we have a photo with Howard and the committee just down below?
Great idea.
See?
Thank you, Ann. That's nice. That was a nice, nice plaque, too. Okay, next item, 3B, for possible action to partner with Jazz and Beyond at their event at Silver Saddle Ranch on August the 7th as an opportunity to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Quality of Life Initiative. Ann?
Thank you. So a few months ago, Dave Bugley, who is president of the Mile High Jazz Band and member of so many other organizations through town, approached Roger Mollendorf with the idea of Jazz and Beyond using Silver Saddle Ranch as one of the venues during their festival in August. So following that brief conversation, I attended one of their meetings at the Chamber of Commerce, and then we just continued that conversation about the use of Silver Saddle Ranch, what is available, how would it all work. And last year, we have a little experience ourselves with the Public Lands Day celebration of having a stage and the music and seeing the electrical opportunities out there. And so with us tonight, Cherie is here and representing Jazz and Beyond. And so she's been out to Silver Saddle. We did walk the venue to see perhaps how the layout would work. And if we... as we continue down this road with Jazz and Beyond, they will plan and organize the performers as they do with all their events all around town. Our opportunities here about partnering with them, especially this year in our 20th anniversary of the Quality of Life Initiative, is we would waive any of the fees that we would usually charge for renting the venue, stages, tables, chairs, equipment, as such. Cherie has also talked about what are some of the other opportunities out there, whether it's working with 4-H kids to actually bring some of the animals out or working with the Friends of Silver Saddle Ranch to conduct events. And so some of the discussion here tonight, I would also like to see if there's an interest on the committee, one of the members, to participate with Cherie about developing a flyer that would recognize both of us on it, and then we would just help advertise where some of our regular venues are as well, like maybe the reader board just outside the community center, some of the flyers around town as such. So Mr. Chair, at this time I can introduce Cherie if you're ready.
Yes, thank you. Cherie, could you come up?
Sure.
Thank you, and thank you for being here.
You're welcome. This is my first meeting like this. What do you call this, a dais? I'm not sure, but anyhow. So I'm Cherie Shipley, and I am a performer, singer around town, around these parts for about 30 years. I also have horses. I love the outdoor space. And Jazz and Beyond, this is the beyond part. So what we try to do is introduce some variety into a festival that is primarily jazz, but it's called Jazz and Beyond because we like to have some of the other local type talent and or activities. I personally have been out to Silver Saddle before a couple years ago with friends and horses and stuff like that, so I already knew the area. And when it was brought to my attention that, well, when Ann came to the meeting, it was, wow, I could envision that kind of thing happening out there. So we would love to have that as a venue. We are pretty much tied to that particular date in August for the festival. The festival starts on the 5th, which is Friday, and runs through the 21st. Ideally, it would be great to have it for us maybe on a different weekend day, but it's just not possible. So the 7th is what we're tied to. And we're thinking of having it start mid-afternoon-ish, looking at the shade and thinking of what else could go on out there besides music. We're thinking of if the stage is not available, we're thinking of bringing in a big flatbed truck and setting up music on the truck. And as Ann said, I was out there and we walked the space and really looked at what would make sense for people arriving and visually and shade-wise and we'd like to bring a food truck out. It would be self-contained, so there'd be these different things that would go on up there. I'd like to, and I have a couple people working on contacting the group that has the mules and burros. I think they're called the Wild Ass Women. Anyhow, and I've met some of those burros before. And it's just such a fun thing. So I'd like to have something like that that's kind of an interactive thing, something that will be really family-oriented. So that's the idea of that particular event. We'd probably have 3 to 4 music acts starting at 3 o'clock. The whole event would end at 8. And that kind of fits into the time frame that the rest of our weekend events during the festival are. Music starts... on the weekends, on Sundays, music starts at 4:30 on the Legislative Plaza and ends at 8. So we're kind of, so we're replacing that whole day out at the ranch. The ranch would be the event, not the Legislative Plaza on that particular day. So it sounds like a fun time to me. And coming up with some other ideas, maybe there are... I have done a lot of events with the 4-H group in Douglas County. I know, you know, their level of enthusiasm, not necessarily Douglas County, but I mean in general 4-H. So the possibility of maybe having some 4-H kids come out with some demonstrations of some kind. I don't know if the members of the posse might come. I'm familiar with some of the members of the posse, at least in Douglas County, maybe some mounted policemen, just some things going on like that with the music. So I think that would be a great venue for it. So I'm happy that it's now kind of available, I guess. Any questions?
Any questions of Cherie? Yes, Donna.
What kind of attendance are you anticipating?
Well, that's a good question. I think that maybe a couple hundred. I know it'll be on a flow because there's always a flow. So if you start at 3, and the reason for starting at 3 was mostly because of how the shade falls at that time. So like 3 to 8. Hopefully there's several hundred people. I don't think it's going to be 500 people, but I don't know that.
Are you anticipating getting in extra bathroom facilities?
Yes, we would bring in, well, they always contract out, I don't know what the company is, but the facilities that they bring onto the Legislative Plaza, for instance, that's already in the works for the budget and all that kind of stuff. So that kind of thing would come out also. Yep.
The main site would be at the Red House?
Right, and we'd use the that side arena for extra overflow parking. And, of course, if we did have animals or any horse trailers, we kind of mapped it out where that would be and how it would separate out for parking.
Other questions from the committee?
Is this a ticketed event?
No.
So it's free?
It's free. Yeah. It's free. So I think that one of the things is obviously it would bring awareness to the ranch for people that don't even know it's there. So that might be a good thing as far as, you know, the city is concerned and for future activities. And for the festival, it's a new venue. It's something new to offer the community.
I think it's a great idea. And it is a 20th anniversary. So, and are you and staff then in a position to help coordinate or help support what Cherie is proposing in order to at least facilitate the availability of facilities and whatever we need to help make it happen?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Staff is able to facilitate the needs.
However, if the committee would, a member of the committee or two would like to be involved to help identify other activities at that time, that's where we would welcome the help.
Okay. Is there anybody on the committee who would like to offer to assist in looking for other possibilities to combine with what Cherie has outlined? Everybody's pretty quiet.
Well, that's okay. We have lots of ideas, and I come up with a lot of other things. So I think that it's more important for us to feel that it's a welcomed event by the committee, and that if we had questions, we can come to the committee with any other questions, or that you're trusting our judgment on at least what I've presented so far. We aren't going to come up with any other wild, crazy things. You know, it's supposed to be a day at the ranch, you know, and have that ambiance of being at a ranch, which is why I'd really like to get, definitely we'll be getting some kind of horses, you know, some animals out there. I think the food truck is really important to have out there. I think it would be a really welcome event if it's publicized that way, too, so that people know. It's not just, okay, music today is out at Silver Saddle Ranch. You know, no, we want it to be I make up quite a few of the posters for events for myself, for my bands, for my company is called Lake Tahoe Entertainment, FYI. So I have been involved with publicity and advertising for a long time, too. So I'm happy to come up with suggestions and present them.
Who's actually producing the event?
Jazz and Beyond.
Jazz and Beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mile High Jazz Association is kind of like the umbrella under or over Jazz and Beyond, which is David and Ellie Bugley.
I think it's great to have a new dimension for the Silver Saddle. I'm not sure it's ever had this kind of musical celebration, and mm-hmm. we need the community to find, you know, more in the community to find the Silver Saddle and to enjoy it. And I think it's great if you can work with staff. I don't know that there's a need to come back to the committee after we finish here tonight unless there are questions or you're being totally unreasonable.
We
really appreciate what you're proposing, and we want to work together. So,
good. Great.
That's great.
All right, thank you.
Okay, yes, Margie.
I just want to say that I am sorry that I can't participate time-wise to help with it, because my husband and I have been enjoying Jazz and Beyond ever since the first year, and I am thrilled to think that we can partner with Silver Saddle, bring Silver Saddle Ranch into the Jazz and Beyond arena.
Yeah,
it sounds like a great opportunity for both of us.
I am too, because I've been on the committee for, this is my third year, the talent committee part of it, and we're always looking for new venues, something fun, something ambient, you know. So this is it for this year.
No, I think that's great. We appreciate that.
All right.
Okay, this is for possible action. Is there any public comment at this point? All right. Do we have a motion?
I move to partner with Jazz and Beyond in their event at Silver Saddle Ranch on August 7th as an opportunity to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Quality of Life Initiative.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Cherie.
Thank you.
Okay, item 3C. To review the use of unmanned aerial vehicles on open space properties and discuss whether an ordinance should be drafted. Ann.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it was the last meeting, or maybe in December, when Member Welch brought this item to the committee as a question. I think, are there concerns, questions, how do we want to address the use of drones on open space properties. And so in your packet also is some correspondence that Mr. Vice Chair Welch acquired from the Nevada Legislative Council Bureau of some of the most recent laws that passed in the last legislative session. Some of the highlights on those laws are where unmanned aerial vehicles can be flown or not flown, such as near correctional facilities, water treatment facilities, sewer treatment facilities, as well as it identified vertical and horizontal distances. And a few other items in your packet are a few of the news articles I found around Carson City, including a few articles from the Airport Authority and BLM, and as well as some discussions from the National Recreation Park Association and articles around the country. And at least in some of the research that I've conducted, most jurisdictions at this point are leaning towards the prohibition or regulation of drones on their properties. And some of the reasons in here are harassment of wildlife, security, privacy, those items. One of the news articles in here for Boulder, Colorado, in which our program was somewhat modeled after in the early days, they still recognize the beneficial use of, yes, we will allow drones, but it will be a permitted use, perhaps for events or management objectives on the properties. One of the other items in here from BLM, I believe they were concerned about wildfires because they use aircraft helicopters to put out fires, and they're concerned that people's own curiosity of using drones would interfere with their management of wildfire suppression. This evening, to help myself as well as the committee and members of the public understand what some of these regulations are, I invited Mr. Tim Rowe, the airport manager, to help us through this process. And what I have on the screen in front of you is what I believe, Mr. Rowe can help us through this, is there are regulations regarding UAVs within 5 miles of an airport. So I asked RGIS division to help identify what does that mean in Carson City. So it's most of the area. What it does not cover would be the south end of Prison Hill and some of the upper reaches of the west side of town, perhaps some of our areas of concern. But Mr. Rowe is here, maybe he can help explain perhaps what the regulations are, maybe some of the impacts that we should be aware of. One of the other items I would like to point out in your packet, yes, this not only Vice Chair Welch has brought this to us, but I have had two recent experiences in town. I did receive a phone call from a gentleman who has a commercial license, and I guess there's different regulations when a commercial license is involved. Also, we conducted a prescribed burn about 2 years ago with the fire department, and not just at that time, but often in our work, we use inmate labor, and inmates cannot be filmed. So that would be a concern to us if we're out working and if there's a drone overhead. It's prohibited. But what enforcement would we have if someone refuses to listen? So I just want to bring those items to the committee.
Thank you. Tim, could you enlighten us a little bit further so we have a little more background and maybe tell us how the FAA looks at this?
I'd be more than happy to. You know, it's a growing concern, and
excuse me, can you just put your name on the record, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. My name's Tim Rowe. I'm the Carson City Airport Manager. Drones and UAS, basically, is what we call it, for unmanned aerial systems, can cover almost anything from the small little quadcopters up to rather large remote control aircraft. They've been in the news a lot lately. And I thought I'd just start with the most recent newsworthy item. On Sunday, a British Airways A320 Airbus was on final approach into Heathrow Airport. Flight 727 from Geneva, was approaching to land. The pilot thought he saw a drone hit the airplane, hit the nose. The Airbus landed safely, no incident, no passengers hurt, everything was fine. The aircraft was examined and no damage found. It's really unclear whether a drone actually hit the aircraft, but there's been numerous cases. I'd like to just go a little bit through the statistics. And while it's unusual for a drone to strike a plane, there have been plenty of close calls, especially in the United States. Hundreds of drones have flown dangerously close to manned aircraft in U.S. airspace, forcing pilots to sometimes take evasive action. And according to Bard College's Center for the Study of the Drone, their recent report, based on the center's analysis of Federal Aviation Administration data from August of 2015 to January 31st of 2016, said there were 519 incidents involving passenger aircraft and unmanned drones in the U.S. That was three times as many incidents as the previous year. One in three were classified as close encounters. These were defined as incidents where a pilot either had to take evasive action, declared a mid-air or near mid-air collision, or described a drone as being dangerously close or within 500 feet of the aircraft. On 24 occasions within the reporting period, a drone reportedly came within 50 feet of a plane, and on 11 occasions, the pilot was forced to take evasive action. Now, the FAA has been encouraged by Congress to do something about regulating this industry, and it is an industry, whether private, for private use, or for commercial use. What they've done with industry associations is they came up with a Know Before You Fly campaign to educate the public about using unmanned aircraft safely and responsibly. Individuals flying for hobby or recreation are strongly encouraged to follow safety guidelines. Now, since December, every time you buy a small little quadcopter or up or higher or bigger, you get a small packet and they're describing some of the criteria that you have to know as a private citizen wanting to go out and fly your quadcopter around the backyard. Individuals flying for hobby or recreation are encouraged to follow safety guidelines, which include, now this is federal, flying below 400 feet and remaining clear of surrounding obstacles, even over people. So illegal to fly over a group of people. It doesn't matter how big or small that group is. Keeping the aircraft in visual line of sight at all times. Remain well clear of and do not interfere with manned aircraft operations. You don't fly within 5 miles of an airport, which was pointed out, unless you contact the airport and control tower before flying. Now, it's a funny thing. The FAA only requires notification, which means a person can simply call you up and say, hey, I'm going to fly my drone outside in my backyard. Click. That's all they have to do. So fortunately, the people that have called me recently have told me what they plan to do, where they plan to do it. Do we need to know anything? And I'm more than happy to share these regulations, the very same ones. You don't fly near people, as I said, or stadiums. If there's a sporting event and you're a private citizen, you can't fly over it. And at this point in time, there is no commercial operations flying over these sporting events. You cannot fly an aircraft, a UAS, that weighs more than 55 pounds. Can't be, of course, reckless and with your unmanned aircraft, you might receive a visit by the Sheriff's Department or Department of Public Safety. It should be kept in mind that model aircraft operations are for hobby and recreational purposes only. On December 14, 2015, the FAA unveiled an interim final rule for drone registration. That would require consumers that own drones between 0.55 pounds for slightly above a half a pound up to 55 pounds must register their drones. Drones, everyone will be able to register online at www.federaldroneregistration.com. It's a $5 registration for each drone that a person registers, but the person responsible for that drone must be the registered owner of that registration. Under the proposed rule, the FAA can impose a civil penalty of up to $27,500 or criminal penalties up to $250,000. And the reason they impose those is simply because they don't want them getting anywhere near an airplane. Under current regulations, any aircraft operation in the national airspace system, now to define a national airspace system, in Carson City, the national airspace system begins at 700 feet above the ground because we have instrument approaches. Some airports, they begin at the ground. Reno Tahoe Airport, for instance, begins at the ground. And anything that's registered for commercial use, it has to be registered. It must be certified by the FAA. It requires at least a private pilot certificate and operational approval. I'll get into that in just a little bit. So if you're going to fly a drone under commercial purposes, you have to be a licensed pilot. Guy that's operating a realty company wants to show property. He has to be a licensed pilot to be able to fly his little drone and take pictures of the house he'd like to sell. Section 333 of the Modernization Reform Act of 2012 by the FAA grants the Secretary of Transportation the authority to determine whether an airworthiness certificate is required. And the FAA will issue any person wishing to operate a U.S. for commercial purposes that certificate of authorization or COA under that section. That's for common use like photography, realty, whatever. The airport authority just recently granted Robeson Engineering an approval, which they received that 333 COA to fly aerial surveillance over the Cinderlite quarries and a couple of other quarries nearby. Now, the state of Nevada has gotten a little bit more restrictive. In 2013, state lawmakers considered many pieces of legislation, including addressing UAS. 41 states have considered adopting similar measures. Section of AB 239, which was passed in 2013, required that any person operating an unmanned aerial vehicle within 5 miles of an airport obtain the consent of the airport authority or the operator of the airport, or if the person has otherwise obtained a waiver, exemption, or other authorization for such operations. Section 18.5.1, a person shall not operate an unmanned aerial vehicle within, and you mentioned this, a horizontal distance of 500 feet or vertical distance of 250 feet from a critical facility. Define critical facility, hospital, prison, airport, police station. You could name a lot of things fall under that category. A person may operate an unmanned aerial vehicle within 5 miles of an airport only if that person obtains the consent of the airport authority or the operator of the airport. Now, we granted such an agreement with the High Sierra Flyers that have an RC club near the Parker Carson Airport. A lot of people say, Parker Carson, what's that? There is an airport up on the hill, but it's actually adjacent to the Parker Carson Airport on the road leading to the landfill. A person is authorized to operate an unmanned aerial vehicle within 5 miles of an airport pursuant to the subsection shall at all times during operation maintain on his or her person documentation that if it's commercial, you must carry your COA. If you're just a guy enjoying life in the backyard, you have to have the registration of your quadcopter in your back pocket or on you. anybody violating this is guilty of a misdemeanor within the state of Nevada. So, up until this time, the airport really hasn't had any problems. Like I said, I've received a couple of calls, people wanting to know where they can go fly. If they fly around their backyard, we don't mind. Just maintains their minimum altitudes. Go up to the RC park. Great place to, a wide open area to fly the your quadcopters or whatever. So, you know, we just want everybody to be safe and stay out of airport. Now, the operational area of the airport for pattern altitudes is 1,000 feet, 500 for helicopters. So that is a big reason we want the quadcopters and the small UAS 400 feet and below, is simply because of the possibility of helicopters. But right now our pattern altitude is 1,000 feet and everybody seems to be happy. We do have an area where we do absolutely do not want UAS, and that's approach departure ends of our east and west runway. We don't want them anywhere near that, 400 feet or below even. So we appreciate they stay clear, and if they do have to fly them, please call and let us know the times. We have to issue, in that case, a notice to airmen to let people know that there's going to be that kind of operation going on. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Tim. Any questions of Tim? Margie?
I have a question. I'm just trying to figure out how best to frame it. I am concerned about the unauthorized use of these drones. It seems that there have been a lot of complaints or concerns all over the country by people who feel their privacy has been violated. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of stars living around Carson City for the paparazzi to come flying over and try to catch, but I still feel that the whole use of drones is an issue. And yet I don't know what, can you give us some ideas what other communities that are maybe similar to Carson City have done?
Basically, there are laws in place. Not every community probably have those laws, but if somebody is infringing on somebody's private property, or if they're running or operating these craft in an unsafe, erratic manner, that is a job for the Sheriff's Department to get involved, and that's who I would be calling. I have been putting stuff like this together. This actually forced me to kind of move this up a little bit. Because I've been planning to meet with Kenny Furlong and some other people at the Sheriff's Department of Public Safety, to discuss what can be done about these folks. Like I said, in six months from January 31st, I had 519 incidents of people acting stupidly. And you're going to have the few people out there who are going to be erratic and operating in an unsafe manner. You can't cure all the problems, but hopefully you're going to be able to keep honest people honest, and they're going to try to do the right thing. Unfortunately, not everyone will. But it will take some heavy fines, maybe a little jail time, to help put an end to some of it.
I have a question for Ann. Why is this not on our agenda?
Member Welch asked us, I think, just general concerns. Had we thought about it?
Had we thought to allow drone use over open space?
We hadn't considered it at all. No discussions till this point.
I got it.
Any other questions or comments for Tim? Tim, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Are there any public comments? Okay, let's go back to the committee. Alan, did you have anything at this point that you would like to add or suggest or comment on?
I'm just trying to think how what the response would be if someone came and said that they wanted to operate a drone over our, you know, open space land. If it's within the 5 miles of the airport, I would assume that you would just refer them to the airport itself. And I don't know whether you want to require something in addition. For instance, if it was Silver Saddle and somebody wanted to, you know, have some sort of event. But, you know, that's the one approach. And if it's somewhere that is actually open space property and someone wanted to have an event on that, then the airport's not really involved except for maybe an advisory sort of thing. And I just, and that's why I brought it up, is that, you know, what would you tell somebody? I mean, and I'm not sure a regulation is necessary. Maybe this is something that would be handled within management plans for the different, you know, the Carson River corridor or those sorts of things. But I really, the goal was, let's talk about it a little bit and get a sense for what we think would be appropriate use, keeping in mind that, you know, we don't want people to do silly things. But if we know what they're going to do and they're upfront about it and there can be some, you know, interaction and setting some boundaries to it, I personally think that, you know, there may be appropriate times, maybe limited times, and specific areas where we'd be appropriate. So that was my goal.
And the conservation easement on Silver Saddle talks about balloons, but I don't think it says anything about UAVs.
Right. This is we talk about the future and new technologies, and we're here. The conservation easement does not address this. And in the past, when we've had discussions, what is passive recreation? Where does open space fit in? What activities are allowed? Often, Roger has said, if it's something that requires a permanent fixture, that's not open space. Like a disc golf course, because you have semi-permanent tee boxes. So it's not suitable for open space. In this case, there is nothing permanent. People are flying their aircraft up above. But to answer one question, how do we address this from the public? And so far, the gentleman who called, who had the commercial license, and he knew about this 5 mile radius, he was the one who informed me of this, and he said, can I fly at the south end of Prison Hill? My reply is, yes, until we have a decision otherwise, I don't have any reason to tell you no.
Donna?
Well, in looking at it, I can see some benefits for drones as useful for open space, like checking on the condition of lands that we don't have to drive out to or hike out to. Search and rescue, of course, and even enforcement. But by the same token, I really don't see how drone activity would fit in with passive recreation at all. I mean, there's a potential for wildlife disturbance and a potential for disturbance of those people who are out enjoying the peace and quiet, and suddenly they're getting buzzed. And I think that we do need some kind of ordinance. Because if we don't have it, we don't have an answer. And we're open to anybody doing whatever they please. That's been kind of an issue we've had with other things. So that's where I sit on this.
Margie?
I think that we have to remember that we're guiding the Board of Supervisors, and we're also representing all of the people of Carson City. And, you know, just like we are trying to work with the off-roaders, I think we're going to have to figure out a way to work with the UAVers as well. Having said that, as devil's advocate, I personally agree with Donna. I don't want to be out walking around in an open space area enjoying, you know, the view of the eagles or watching some interesting activity and suddenly be interrupted by a drone flying around. So I did want to register that I think we have to keep in mind all of the recreationists in Carson City in all of their facets, not excluding anyone.
Yeah, Tony, do you have a comment?
So I guess just a little bit in summary, you know, I guess basically what we're saying is that we're okay with responsible recreation with it. I mean, there's a lot of advanced technology and a lot of the UAS software that follows colors, follows vehicles, follows tracking devices. So it's not just buzzing everywhere and whatnot. There are people who use them irresponsibly, and there's the huge commercial venture with it, which has a huge return on investment for open space, invasive monitoring, search and rescue, just to start. You know, I guess, can we really write an ordinance for responsible recreational use? Or would that really rely on more FAA guidelines or, you know, airport guidelines?
I'm trying to look over at Iris. I think from a legal standpoint, that's probably too vague for me to go out and determine whether your use is responsible or not.
Well, I guess what I'm kind of getting at is we would have to define responsible in that case.
I don't think it's a question that I can answer today because there would be a lot that went into it, but it would just depend on what scope we wanted to address.
I guess my take on this is we have a state statute, we have FAA regulations, and to date, to my knowledge, we haven't really had major problems. I see the potential for problems, and of course we can read about the kinds of things that have happened in other places, but my tendency on something like this is to say let's monitor it, see if we really do have a problem, and if we have to add something to the layers of regulation excuse me, that already exist, we can look at that in the future.
I guess I have a question, too, on the reverse side of that. Are we responsible if there's any knee-jerk reaction for people flying and someone shoots one out of the sky or runs it over or destroys it in some other manner?
I'm guessing, yeah, maybe if someone runs over someone else's property, that would be where the sheriff's office comes in, as a destruction of private property.
250 feet is outside the range of a shotgun. This is an item for possible action. Do we have any suggestions, ideas from the committee? Yes, Margie.
I would recommend that we take no action at this time and just keep it, pun intended, on our radar.
Is that a motion?
I would make the motion that we take no action at this time and just continue to monitor drone or UAS use within our area and within our open spaces, and visit the topic further if in the future if we need to. That's my motion.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, any public comment? Further discussion from the committee? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, and I think it's fair to say that it's kind of like shooting or campfires or some of the other things. If we have a problem, I think it's pretty clear we're going to want to try to address it. But I hate to put the Board of Supervisors through something that at this point they're liable to ask, do we have a problem? Okay, anything else from staff on that one?
I don't have anything to add.
Okay, thank you. Tim, thank you very much for coming. Okay, the next item. Certainly.
Statement, I just thought about it. On the map that you had next to our picture of our airport, MEV. Mm-hmm. MEV is Minden. There are alternate airport. So we're CXP. But thank you guys for inviting me to come.
Thank you for informing us. Okay, item 3D, possible action to recommend to the Board of Supervisors submittal of a grant application for the Land and Water Conservation Fund for fee title acquisition of 20 acres APN 007-051-81 located along Highway 50 and owned by W. Michael Fagan. Ann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The subject property is 20 acres located along Highway 50 West, just near the Clear Creek interchange. This item has been in front of the committee a couple times. One of the past conversations is during a time when our finances weren't as high as they are today, and Michael Fagan offered the option of trading a parcel with us. And so over the last year, year and a half, we have looked at a few parcels in town. For one reason or another, those parcels haven't worked, but we're looking at one, I think possibly the last option in town. It is a parcel located up near Sunland Vista Park. It is a parcel owned by the Parks Division. And at the time in the 70s, when it was deeded over to the city, at that time, as the subdivision was being developed, kind of an earthquake scarp was identified in that area. So with the assumption that the parcel could not be developed, so they gave it to the city as a potential park. That was before Sunland Vista was constructed. Sunland Vista Park came soon after, and this parcel remains undeveloped today. And there are no plans to develop it. It just remains as an open piece of ground. It does have grass, it does have a few trees, so it is maintained by the city, but otherwise it's a vacant parcel. We did take this to the Parks and Recreation Commission just a few weeks ago. They did approve possible disposal of this property. The next step is to notify the surrounding homeowners to invite them to the June meeting of the Parks and Recreation Commission to hear the public comment. If that goes forward, then it will be on to the Board of Supervisors for that approval. In addition to that, we will have what's called an MPR, Major Project Review, within the city. Each of the departments sits around a table, typically of a development proposal, but in this case, a disposal, to discuss are there any issues from the rest of the city. What is it used for, a fire hydrant or water lines or something else from the overall city that I'm not aware of before we agree with that final disposal. We don't anticipate this parcel, the parks parcel, to be equal in value to the 20 acres. And so there will be a gap in funding between the two. And that's why we're asking for your approval tonight to submit a grant application to the Land and Water Conservation Fund to help bring that dollar difference up and make it more affordable for us to purchase this property. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Ann. Any questions of Ann from the committee?
I just have a couple. One, there was a typo on second page, second paragraph. Mr. Fagan would proceed with the DOT. I think you wanted a with there. But my question is, if the survey showed that this property really could not be developed because of earthquake potential, then that just falls through and we're back to the drawing board again?
That is correct. Well, we're back at the drawing board, but I think this is our last option.
Other questions of the committee? Okay, is there any public comment? All right, hearing none. You have found a parcel that may be tradable, subject to Mr. Fagan's investigation. Probably not worth the complete value of the parcel we want to acquire. So before us tonight is request to apply for a Land and Water Conservation Fund grant that would hopefully dovetail with the property, if that worked out, to allow us to acquire the 20 acres up at the underpass at Lake Tahoe, on the road to Lake Tahoe, right?
Correct. Well stated.
Okay, because this has been around a long time. Mr. Fagan's been patient. But the parcel that we're looking at is right at the underpass, crossing under Highway 50 there at just above Clear Creek. So it has some potential benefit that would be very nice for trail linkages. It's adjacent to a portion of the Horse Creek Ranch area. And so we're working to consolidate and potentially put together a linkage that could be valuable. So that's the reason that it's been, Mr. Fagan's been patient, but we've been interested in the parcel as a linkage parcel that way. Okay, this is a possible action item. Do we have a motion?
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors submittal of a grant application to the Land and Water Conservation Fund for a fee title acquisition of 20 acres, APN 007-051-81, located along Highway 50 and owned by W. Michael Fagan.
Thank you. Don, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion from the committee? I will abstain from this voting because we have done some survey work for Michael Fagan, not associated with this property, but on the Horse Creek Ranch property. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And I will abstain. Thank you. Next item, 3E. Recommended the Board of Supervisors approval of the fiscal year 2016-2017 budget for the Quality of Life Open Space account. Ann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The budget provided to you this evening, as I identifies in the staff report, some of these items are at the discretion of the committee, others are not, and I will go ahead and walk through some of those items for you this evening, as well as for the benefit of the public. Okay, so the first item for our budget is the salaries. In the next fiscal year, you'll see a $20,000 increase. At first, that made my eyes go pretty large as well, like, wow, what's happening that we have a $20,000 increase? The difference here is this year, this fiscal year, our park ranger only worked 7 months. So the $20,000 increase makes up for that whole different 5 months of employment that we hope to have him next year. The hourly seasonal line item, I highlight it in bold because I would like perhaps a little discussion and review from the committee here. You'll see an increase here of $9,000 for a total of $59,000. In the past, this line item has funded and still funds a number of positions, those hourly seasonal positions. And so we have funded two summer maintenance folks. They worked with us, also with the Parks Division. The Parks Division provided a vehicle. Consistent with the Unified Pathways Master Plan as well as our management plan, I would like to take one of those positions and change it over to a trails coordinator. And also add $9,000 to that salary. The reason for that is the expectations that a trails coordinator would be out and about representing the city at a number of meetings that I attend. For example, I highlighted some of those in your report. So this person would attend local and regional meetings, such as the Carson City Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Board, the Eastern Sierra Trails Coalition, the Nevada State Line to State Line Bikeway, the State Route 28 Corridor Management Plan, and the Tahoe Bikeway Project. Those are just a few that I'm spending my time attending these meetings and being part of the regional projects. So there would be some expectations this person would operate at a professional level. Also, the position could help us with grants. For example, two of the grants that Rich and I are working on right now, Rich is working on the recreational trails program for the south end of Prison Hill. I'll be working on the Southern Nevada Public Land Management Act for trails that are also on Prison Hill on the old Buzzies Ranch. So the person should have some good riding skills. In addition to that, the Epic Bike Ride Mountain Bike Event coming up in June, the inaugural event in Carson City, and also to take place over the next 5 years. They would be our department representative on the trails and some of the events there. They would review the city plans and planning efforts and work with Muscle Powered. those are the things that we already do between Rich, myself, Vern, and even Public Works. So I mentioned that a trails coordinator was identified in the Unified Pathways Master Plan. It was the number one action item. And here we are 10 years after the plan, and the city still doesn't have a trails coordinator. And as most of you know, that's one of our highest demand items anymore, our trails. If approved in the budget for this position, I also identified where some of those first priority projects would be for this person that we just aren't finding time to complete. Some of those would be to actively plan and schedule work days for regular trail maintenance. We do work with Muscle Power. Jeff Potter just sent an email yesterday or today, starting with weekly work days. But certainly having another person on staff, we could work with Great Basin Institute, Eagle Scouts, grab so many of these other opportunities all around town. Develop an OHV map for Carson City. So important. We hear so many conflicts around town, and it's hard to avoid those conflicts if the OHV users don't know where to go. So it'd be very useful. Develop standards for kiosks, trail wayfinding signs, interpretive signs, and a couple other projects that I identified here. So for those reasons, I'm recommending this to the committee. And because this is coming out of the open space budget, this position would work primarily for open space. If parks or other divisions or the city sees the greater need for this, I would like to see some additional funding, but I don't think open space should pay for the city as a whole, but that is also up to the committee to decide. But also, if, and this is not the proposal at this time, if it was a full-time position, it would have to go up to the Board of Supervisors for approval. That is not the proposal at this time, though. A couple other items. There was actually a decrease in employee benefits. I'm not sure why that is. Professional services, that is also increased by $25,000. We're hoping to actually have a site development plan for Silver Saddle Ranch, Prison Hill, and the whole river area, just so we as staff have some direction. What is the future? Where are we going with some of the lands that we now manage? Training, there's no change. Silver Saddle expenses, there's just a little bit of change now since we've had the property almost a year. We know actually where some of those bills are coming in. Machinery and equipment, there is an increase, $36,000 to buy a new truck. We have 3 full-time staff, a couple part-time, and only 2 vehicles. And even today, we were scrambling around and sharing vehicles. So even with the current staff, we need a truck. But if we bring on a part-time trails coordinator, we just would need another truck at that point. Fire suppression, this is an account. We cannot change this dollar figure. This is kind of an insurance account that the city has, that there's a couple different accounts throughout the city that contribute, us, Public Works, Stormwater, Fire Department. The Horse Creek Stewardship account, also we cannot change. Initially, this was a $50,000 donation to the Open Space Program from Mr. Fagan for stewardship of the Horse Creek Ranch. There was a little bit of expense. About 5 years ago, we went in a cost share with Michael Fagan to install fence around his property where he was having some trespass issues. Inmate payroll, that is a new item for this committee. I mentioned earlier that we are working with inmates from the Northern Nevada Correctional Center. You can see it's a very low dollar amount. What rate do we pay?
It's
30-something
cents an hour.
30-something cents an hour. And so our department, the number of inmates varies depending on who's available to work, anywhere between 10 to 15 inmates, but we often have 2 to 4 inmates work with us 1 day a week. And so it's time for us to help contribute. Very little, but it's definitely the labor that we need. The travel budget has not increased. The vehicle fuel, we doubled that because of the second vehicle this year. This is our first year with the new Ranger truck. So now we doubled the dollar amount for the fuel. ISC, internal service charges. The committee really has very little decision-making power on that. I say very little because we have in the past when we were being overcharged, and so we have made sure to keep in communication with the finance department on how are these numbers actually being calculated throughout the city. And if, our land acquisition, we added $104,000. What I want to point out in those two columns there for land acquisition, the current balance, $537,000, the proposed budget next year, $104,000. Whatever we don't spend this year can roll over next year. So it's not like it goes away. So if we don't spend it this year, we will have it to help acquire Michael Fagan, conservation easement, other properties that we're looking at. And there's $17,000 that we just left in an undesignated category for if it's needed somewhere. It's easier for us to move. Are there any questions?
Questions of Ann? Alan?
Can inmates be used on trail maintenance or construction?
Yes, I can.
Do you anticipate that at all, or?
If we had someone to supervise them. The inmates, I don't recall, maybe Rich can help me out here, of all the ins and outs of working with the inmates, but I know when we work with some of the juvenile kids that they cannot be around other volunteers. So maybe Rich can help me out some of the program.
There is the potential to do trail work, but you have to have a person or a staff member that's gone through a formal training. I think it's only 4 or 8 hours, but that would be one of the requirements. So if our volunteer was there coordinating that type of activity, they'd have to go through that training, or staff would have to be on site.
So the trail coordinator could be that person potentially?
That's correct, yes. Our park ranger, Rich and I went through an office training, but then our park ranger went down to the Northern Nevada Correctional Center for their training, so he has actually that certification.
Other questions of Ann or staff? Yes, Donna.
I'm thrilled to see the trail coordinator. And you answered my question regarding Parks and Rec. They're on their own. When you say part-time, half-time?
Since this person would be under the city payroll, it would be a maximum of 1,039 hours in a fiscal year. So my vision would be they would work year-round, maybe 20 hours a week. But it could be flexible because it is a part-time position, and if someone's going on vacation for a month, sure, they could work 40 hours in May and take all of June off. So there is that flexibility.
Okay, and the last thing I would like to see added to the list of the groups, the EVTC, because we're getting ready to submit our final report next month. And there's a lot of stuff that the trails coordinator could be involved in with that.
Okay. Inmate, now that's not NDF, right? That's inmates from the city facilities, or is that both?
That's a good point, because we do have two sources of labor. This is, the ones in our budget is the NDF inmates. The city's jail is another source that we're not charged for and is available for us.
Okay, and you know how I feel about the internal service charges. Fleet management, is that maintenance of our vehicles?
Correct.
Okay. And then just out of curiosity, why is the power going down when we've already spent more than $4,000 this year?
Maybe I reverse those numbers. I'll double check that with Gary and make sure I'm managing the numbers the right way.
I just noticed that, or I would have said something earlier. Okay. Any other comments from the committee or questions? Any public comments, questions? I think this...
I have an answer for you.
All right, go ahead.
Because that 4,000 is the current balance. So the budget started at 5,000, and we have a current balance of 4,000. So
gotcha.
We've only
so
spent
we've only spent less than 1,000. Okay. Thank you. I think this budget and our discussion continues to reflect our transition from acquisition to management. And I think it's important as we get into more salary levels that we maintain a really focused commitment, if you will, to the management of open space and our mission of trying to keep it well-maintained, well-signed, and avoid becoming an organization that tends to be top-heavy with regard to salaries as opposed to a sort of a can-do on the ground. Let's really try to get things going. And we've always enjoyed that, and I think we want to continue that. But it's really important from my perspective that we maintain that that sense that we are trying to do hands-on management of open space, and it's a resource for everybody, that our job is to make every dollar go as far as it can. So thank you, and I I think the Trails Coordinator is a great idea. I think it's going to lead to a lot of other things from a grants perspective and other possibilities, volunteers. We have an awful lot of resources out there that don't cost us directly if we invest well in our personnel and our effort management of time. So, okay, this is a possible action item. Do we have a motion on the recommendation?
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors approval of the fiscal year 2016-2017 budget for the Quality of Life Open Space account.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Toby. Any further discussion? Any public comment? I will be abstaining because our firm has done work for the open space with regard to the master plan on Silver Saddle or the management plan. So all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And I will abstain. Okay, thank you, Ann. Number 3F, possible action to recommend to the Board of Supervisors submittal of a grant application to the Bureau of Land Management Southern Nevada Public Lands Management Act program and to allocate $50,000 towards a cash match. Rich, is that you?
That's me, Rich Wilkinson, Senior Natural Resource Specialist. I'm going to backtrack a little bit because with a new committee member tonight, I'd like to kind of go a little bit back to where this process started. August 2015, we held a joint meeting between the Open Space Advisory Committee and the Parks and Recreation Commission. And at that meeting, we selected two members from each group to help staff put this project together. First meeting was held December 8, 2015. At that time, we developed a project summary sheet, a scoring matrix, and a pros and cons worksheet for the group. The group also at that meeting looked at all of the projects citywide, and we tried to bring them into three regional areas. Those three regional areas included the Silver Saddle Ranch and Buzzy's Ranch area, the west side of Carson City, and the Prison Hill Recreation Area. And so the volunteer group turned in their scoring matrix sheets and their pros and cons sheets, and we had a follow-up meeting on March 7, 2016. We passed out the scoring matrix and the pros and cons sheet at the last meeting. And so at this meeting, we discussed the highest ranked project, which ended up being Silver Saddle Ranch and Buzzy's Ranch. We've had an email come in from the SNPLMA representative saying that this deadline is now April 29th and no longer September of 2016. So we've had to expedite the process. And as a result of that, one of the easiest ways to put together a grant project was to consider trail improvements.
And so in your staff report, we work with a local consultant to put together a list of cost estimates and also a conceptual map. And so the map identifies connecting to the Riverview Park Trail, and that would extend that trail all the way from Morgan Mill Preserve to Carson River Park. And so that was one of the portions that was discussed with that working group. The other trail would be connecting the 5th Street Trailhead down to Silver Saddle Ranch, and then tying into the Mexican Ditch Trail and coming from Carson River Road down to the Red House, because currently the only trail that we have out there is the actual road. And so by adding a little trail in there, people would not have to walk on the road. So initial cost estimates at this time are in excess of $1.3 million for the grant. And we are asking to allocate $50,000 out of the quality of life budget. There is no match requirement with this grant, but most grants get ranked higher if you are providing some form of match. And so that was one recommendation. With this proposed conceptual map, we're looking at creating 3.5 miles of trail. And it would also include two safe crossings from the Buzzies side to Silver Saddle Ranch over Carson River Road, which is very important right now. It's a rural road, but it's actually a fairly busy road, and people tend to drive at high rates of speed. So I wanted to give an update on that. We would like to take this to the Board of Supervisors with your recommendation and then pursue this grant. And it has to be submitted by April 29th, so short window.
Thank you, Rich. I know it's tough, but I'm happy to see the deadline moved up, because it conceivably gives us the ability to do something sooner. So any other comments or questions from staff? Toby?
I just have a quick question. Just looking at the map, I'm kind of assuming the West Riverbank Trail would be a Class 4 trail, just a kind of continuation of what's in Riverview Park. But the Prison Hills Trail, or what's been talked about as the base of Prison Hills Trail, would that also be a Class 4, or would that be a standard 32-inch tread?
I'm not familiar with the reference of Class 4, but it would be similar to what we have on the Mexican Ditch Trail and already in Riverview Park.
Class 4 is whitewater. Anything else, Toby? Is that okay? Donna?
I'm a little confused still. So the section along the base of the Prison Hill from 5th Street would be a single track, or it would be like Mexican Ditch?
Correct. It would be like
so
Mexican
both of
ditch.
Them would be Mexican
Correct.
Ditch. Okay, and I had one other question. Can we use any of the volunteer hours in that match? We've got a lot of volunteer hours racked up.
Are you talking about existing or future?
Existing or future.
Sure. I think there's an opportunity to throw that in there. And we have talked with Muscle Power.
Jeff's got all the data.
Well, for letters of support as well.
Yeah,
for
I'm sure
project.
Kelly will do a letter of support. But Jeff's got all the volunteer hours from the Ash to Kings Trail, and he's going to start racking them up again now. So
generally, hours should be directly project-related. So there might be potential of adding some hours, like on the north end of Prison Hill. Toby and Jeff have been spending time to help us identify trails in that area, so that it is probably a potential there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just hate to see us let those sit there and not use them.
No, that's a great suggestion. Thank you.
I think that's a good idea. I don't think we want to substitute for money, but we want to add to it to show that there's financial – there's committee or community commitment, and because this is a potentially large multiplier in terms of the grant funds for the investment that we might make, and it's the kind of project that I think they would really tend to be interested in. So, yes, Margie.
I wanted to make a comment as one of the people who served on the volunteer committee. I wanted to state that we looked at a lot of options, including infrastructure of the Silver, of fixing the problems out at Silver Saddle. And we determined that because of this expedited date, there were two reasons to go forward with trails specifically. Number one, we could get, they could get, the staff can get trails, trails grant put together more quickly. There's a lot of unknowns regarding the infrastructure needs out at Silver Saddle Ranch, and we didn't want to start throwing money towards that project until we understood the whole scope. So I know that staff is also putting together a site, what did you call it, a site plan?
Or site development plan.
Site development mm-hmm. plan. And we hope to phase in future aspects around Silver Saddle Ranch and Buzzy's Ranch in future years with Simplima. So this is just a start, and we're hoping to expand over the next few years. So I wanted to make that clear to the public and to the committee.
Thank you, Margie, and we appreciate your efforts and Alan's efforts, I think, on that committee. Okay, any other questions or comments from the committee? Public comment? Mr. Graytak, nice to see you.
Hi. For the record, my name's Dan Graytak. I'm a citizen in Carson City. May I give you guys some things, because I'll be referring to them. So I was on the Carson River Advisory Committee for years, and I sat on the place for representing wildlife values and interest up and down the river corridor. So I'm taking you back to the charrette that was put together as part of a conceptual master plan for the properties we're looking at. So I was on the natural resources team, and we put together and we looked and we said, one of the things we need is to conserve some habitat along the river corridor. I'm all for trails, and I think we need trails, but that West Bank Trail I have an issue with, because that's some of the area that was was considered a special management area by the charrette. And so I went from the resource team over the trails guys, and I said, hey, trails guys, I know we have all of these trails we want to put everywhere, but trails really fragment habitat. You just have to look at the Morgan Mill Trail to see what happens when we develop a new trail in an area that doesn't have development. It doesn't take too many years before the habitat that was there is drastically changed. If we want our open spaces to have those wildlife values and habitat values, we have to give some of these areas a rest. And this piece on Buzzy's Ranch is one of the last pieces that hasn't been disturbed. There's fishermen trails, a little bit of casual stuff, but it doesn't have a designated. So we convinced the trails guys to say, ho, there is no trail. There already is a trail there. The aquatic trail is right there. So you can float that section, and you don't have a people trail on one side. The other concern I have is all the other side of that trail is private land. We can't dictate what they do on private land. It's pretty much open now, but in the future it could be an ATV track, condominiums. They can clear all the vegetation. So we can't say the private people are going to protect the habitat, and we can build a trail over here and fragment it. So those groups in the charrette said, yeah, maybe we could save this. Another spam management area was the Vidler, and we've already built a trail on the Vidler. So I think we need to visit some of those and say, hey, do we need to look at that? So I would see need for trail on the southeast side of the river, where we have so much impact already that we need to try to protect. We have so much encroachment into the river corridor that if we're going to try to develop something, we could do that. The opposite bank for a lot of that is already set aside by the BLM. They fenced that and left it open, and the trail avoids that riparian corridor. So there is a little bit of reserve already on the Silver Saddle, but there's impacts across the river. So I don't know how you can do that, whether it's too late now, but I want you to consider those kind of things when we look at building a new trail where we don't have it, where we have really good habitat values. We need some space on the river as conservation and reserve for wildlife. That's my two cents.
Don't go away, Dan. I would like to, on the map, go through exactly where Dan is suggesting we should be careful in terms of the potential habitat concerns that you're expressing.
So between where there's a black fence and a red fence, the blue line is the aquatic trail on that map. Agriculture to remain. This was the map that was produced by the Natural Resources team. Is that right?
I think this was the trails.
This is the trails map, okay.
What we're showing is figure 14 from the 14, shrimp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
the blue line trail recommended there or was there was talking, that's the aquatic trail. So that map did not have any trail on that. Created in the charrette. If you look at the other one, have you got figure 10? So these are the areas that the charrette group looked and said, well, we're going to call these special management areas, and the definition there was no development or developed access. So we had some conservation reserve area identified up and down the corridor so that we can maintain some habitat.
So the lower right-hand corner of the south, special management south Silver Saddle Ranch area, that's the area now?
That has some protection. And the trail goes around it towards Mexican Dam, and it kind of, people don't go in, the cows don't go in to that big area down there. So it doesn't have developed access.
Okay. Now the area then from Carson River Park to the north end of the Anderson Ranch on the along the river, is that the corridor you're concerned about, right, particularly, Dan?
They're calling it Girard Special Management Area. And that pretty much, yeah, from 5th Street to Carson River Park. So the east bank, basically all private land. The west bank has no trail developed in it now. You know, and our concept was that would be a great reserve area for the habitat, for the wildlife, somewhere that they can go that they aren't going to be disturbed. They move out of there, and then we get to find them everywhere else, but if we chase them out of the whole river corridor, those values are gone. It's really hard to build that back after they're gone, you know, if we would have a trail that was 150 feet away from the top of the bank, I don't think anybody wants to walk in the middle of the ag field. Your ag operator doesn't want to give that up. I could perceive a trail that went down through the old main road through the ranch that could connect you. But, you know, they have the Mexican ditch that can connect you from that area to up above. And we really need a lot of work on that stuff that's on the southeast side of the river. And I don't think we can expect the road grant that they call a trails grant to do a lot of those improvements. I don't know if you could make these two work together. They're going to do paving and drainage, and the trails and other improvements for river access, you know, could come into this grant. But that's just what I'm guessing.
Yes, Don.
Dan, what would your reaction be as opposed to doing this, the wide class four trail that they're talking about, going just to a single track and keeping it? What is it, Toby? I can't remember the figure we have on the Eagle Valley Trails Committee report about how far the trail has to be from the high water mark of the river. It's quite a bit. It's like, I thought it was 150 feet.
I think the Carson River Master Plan talked 150 feet. We don't do that in a lot of our existing areas as it is.
Well, on the plan that EBTC is working on, that's what we're using, that figure, that whatever that figure is, for trails along the river. So it would not be right along the edge of the river.
Well.
And a single track is going to be less disturbance than a wide class four.
But I think if you move 150 feet inside, you're inside the cowman's operation. You know, typically they want those people want to walk under the shade of the cottonwoods. They want to be in the riparian gallery, and I like it. Those are the trails that we expect. But those are the trails that we have the most impact on the wildlife that likes those same conditions. And we're linking everything with trails from one end of the county to the other. We need to be conscientious of where they're at. And we can't throw the trail on the private property owners.
Mr. Chair, can I make a comment?
So
the map provided in your packet is a conceptual map. By no means are we saying we're building right here as design. As Rich stated, we have a few weeks to put this whole application together. So there will be time to go out and take a look at these properties to identify exactly where these trails are going to go. A few other comments I'd like to make is when we acquired this particular parcel from James Girard, the purchase and sale agreement only provided us 10 feet between the river up to the ranch to build a trail. So we could be limited. I don't want to say we are limited. I think there could be potential to have discussions with the rancher to see what are the topographic conditions, where are the best locations to build this trail. Additionally, with some of these concerns in mind, let's keep in mind that we are likely to lose water rights on some of this property. And so what we know today is all of the irrigated fields may eventually at least some of it be converted to sagebrush, or we hope it's sagebrush and not weeds. And so maybe some of that upland area is the better area to build a trail, which would protect some of these riparian areas.
And was that condition of purchase of 10 feet from the river, was that tied to maintenance of the agricultural operation under the agreement that Girard had?
It wasn't specifically tied to the irrigation agreement in that sense. The purchase and sale agreement gave us an opportunity to provide recreation since we were purchasing the land for Carson City residents. But the purchase and sale agreement does state also that while there are water rights and, still owned and applied to the land, the sellers reserve the exclusive right to ranch these lands as well, which answers some of those questions. Can we build a trail to the wetlands or through the ranch? No, we do need to maintain agricultural operations.
Okay, if what I'm hearing then, let me know if I'm accurate in saying the concerns that Mr. Greytak is expressing are not items that are a done deal. We have some flexibility with regard to, if we get the grant, how we handle it and the way in which we might approach trails in that river area. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
Okay. Comments or questions from?
One more. And the SHRET was such a great plan, and we're using that as our planning tool. But I did find this map also in the SHRET, which identifies this green line is a trail right through the irrigated, right through the pastures as well. So the plan almost contradicts itself as well.
Which group produced that one? Is that what
this
you?
Is the part of the Silver Saddle Ranch Prison Hill team.
That looks like Boulder, where the farmland is open to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Just open the gate and go.
What is the? Could you scroll down so you can see the legend on that?
Okay. Any other comments or questions from the committee? Toby.
I guess, you know, just maybe for compromise purposes at this point, I mean, because there is, it is definitely a valid point about fragmentation through the fragmentation of riparian zone. The future trailhead road crossings and the future trail that follows Crescent River Road, since those are dash lines as proposed, could we actually flip those so that the trail that follows the river, the West Riverbank Trail, could that be dashed as something that needs more exploration, while the road crossing and the road that follows the river to link everything from Mexican Ditch to Silver Saddle, could that be a solid line?
As the working group, we thought quite the opposite. Along Carson River Road, there's actually a lot more challenges. And because the trail on the north side of Carson River Road, in the purchase and sale agreement, we actually don't have that right. So we would have to work with the rancher to gain access, if you will, to build the trail there.
Where does that put us? We have comments, expressions of concern. We have kind of an open pending application. Do we think we have enough flexibility in our application to allow us to maybe visit this in more detail going forward, from the not prior to the grant submittal, but as part of the process of where do we go from here if the grant's approved?
My personal opinion is that we definitely need to probably identify the areas that we want to focus our work on, because I think it would be difficult after we sign an agreement and they award us the funding to do those types of modifications. This is my first experience with this funding source, so I'd probably defer to Ann, who's had a little more experience with putting it in, but I think even though we put conceptual on there, we should have something that's fairly close. That'd be my recommendation.
In my experience, I think SNPLMA, because they hurried this deadline for us, I think a conceptual plan like this would be sufficient for them to award us the funding, and then we can work on the details later.
Okay. Other comments or questions from the committee? Dan, anything to add?
I just get nervous when we say we're pushing it down the road, you know, just because then I'll hear back, we got the money, we need to do it. We have constraints already from the lease. I just heard we're 10 feet on the fence. That's the top of the bank for most of that whole area. So if we go under those constraints, I don't see how we're going to get a trail that meets it. It might be a single track, but I, you know, once you let them in, you know, we can't say, no, this is a reserve area. We had too much impact. All the owls are gone, you know, those kind of things after the fact. So I'm nervous at doing that. I like getting trails money. I just think that there's better places than there to do trails.
Any other comments from the committee? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Is there any other public comment? Okay. The proposed action is to recommend a grant application to the SNPLMA folks at BLM, recommend to the board that they approve a submittal of a grant application and to allocate $50,000 towards a cash match. Any recommendations, motions?
I'm being new here and can appreciate all the work that went into this proposed trail stuff and see the need for it, but I'm very reluctant to to say go ahead with the grant, not knowing exactly what we're going to do with the money. I mean, if we're going to do that trail, or if it's going to be the trail that was recommended by this study over here, I mean, I think they're two different things. And I really appreciate the fact that the environmental situation is fragile. So I would like to make sure that that is preserved.
Thank you, Jerry. Any other comments? Donna.
Yes. Is it possible, has it happened in the past, that especially when I hear the 10 feet issue, I mean, that I don't see how you're going to get a full-size trail in there, period. I can only see a single track. That as we move down the road, maybe we start at 5th Street and work along that trail and work on this other piece to see what actually can be done, we get further into the process. If we get the money, who knows? We may not get enough money to do much more than get a crossing to get the Mexican ditch finished through there. Could we request a change and maybe take that money and fix up all the trails on Prison Hill that we just so desperately need to work on?
This particular source of funding can't be used for maintenance.
Okay.
So it would be construction of something new.
So, but could we apply that, request an application then to move that money to a different trail project? It's not like we don't have a lot of projects on the list.
We have 8 days to get this application.
No, I understand that. I'm saying if we were to be given the money, and we get through the process, we get down the road, and we're looking at that, and we're going, you know, really it's not a good idea. We have this money. Could we then apply to them to move that money to a different trail project? Is that prohibited?
It possibly prohibited. And based on my experience, one grant that we had prior to this was a hazardous fuels grant on the west side of town. And twice I asked to extend that scope of work and was denied. So it's not likely under this grant. What can happen though, and this I think is our big pie in the sky, let's put it big all together. If we go through this process, or as we go through this process, and determine that we can only squeeze in a 3-foot trail or 5-foot trail, that is certainly an option as part of this project to bring down that scope of work. Correct, in which we are also giving money on the Eagle Valley Creek Bridge. We were awarded $265,000, and that project included two bridges. We only completed one bridge and added a culvert. So our whole project was maybe under $100,000. So yeah, we can give back money. We don't want to give back money. Let's try to complete some projects.
Donna?
Given that, I'm ready to make a motion.
I think we got a little more discussion. Margie had a comment.
I really remember the discussions at the Charette, and I have been leery of a trail tight along the edge of the river over there on the west side all along. But I want to suggest that we have so little time left on this process, or we lose a whole round of funding. I would like for us to go, my thinking would be for us to go ahead with what we've got at this point and consider that we are very likely going to continue some sort of a trail along the river, but maybe move it farther south and across the river. Once we get closer to an actual grant, once we get closer to a grant award, we can perhaps revisit that part. Anne?
Can you define, you said move it across the river?
Move it. We have a trail connection under the bridge. We have talked for some time about needing a way to get pedestrians across the river there. Move that trail south from there. On the east side of the river.
In the area of Sierra Vista Lane?
Yes.
Yes, we are hoping to look at that probably as the site development plan for Silver Saddle Ranch, taking a look at the Sierra Vista Lane aquatic trailhead and working with Public Works on their flap grant. So I'm hoping to even bring that forward already to the committee this year.
Okay, so we do have that in our plan, and that is not seriously changing our scope of work, in my opinion. We're still talking about the same location, the same idea. We have studied this. We determined that a trail in this one point would fragment the wildlife habitat. We propose to move that trail south and east.
If we want Sierra Vista Lane as part of the project, we need to identify it now. We can't identify it later. It would not be part of the scope of work.
I am going to suggest then that we move forward with what we've got and maybe have to turn some money back if we can't make this trail along the west side of the river work within the constraints that we need to follow to keep wildlife habitat fragmentation at a minimum. Okay. I just don't see how we can revise a grant at this point and still get it to the Board of Supervisors and get it out of the office.
Yeah, I don't think we're in a position tonight to revise the grant, but I think we've heard something that's really worth consideration. You know, we are open space, not trails. And so we have to, I think, try to find balance, and it sounds like we're going to need a little more effort going forward to see if there's a way to adjust some of the things that were pointed out as, I think, very, very legitimate items for discussion. But I think we have to go ahead with the grant application. One of the arguments, obviously, would be if we had six more months to flesh it out, we might not have to go back and you don't know what they're going to say if they were to grant us money and then we asked to change parts of it. But I think I personally am much more willing to go forward with that understanding because, frankly, as I said initially, I think trails are really important and that's a way for people to enjoy the open space. But if we're destroying it from the standpoint of habitat, I think it's our job to help find that balance. So. Any other comments from the committee or public comments? Mr. Graytak.
Can't we just take the West Bank Trail off of this plan? Is it going to be hard to just pull those dollars out of this and say we're looking for a smaller grant because this is what we identified and then we don't have this embarrassment down the road if we took the money and can't use it? That's just a suggestion.
Okay, any other further comment? Do we have a motion? Donna.
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors submittal of a grant application to the Bureau of Land Management Southern Nevada Public Land Management Act program and to allocate $50,000 towards a cash match plus any volunteer hours we have available to add to that.
Okay, we have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Are we of a mind generally that we're not locked in concrete here, that we do recognize some of the concerns and we want to keep flexible with regard to what we might actually ultimately construct should we be successful in the grant? Is that a fair summary?
And I believe the staff has heard that and we'll move forward with that.
Thank you. All right. We have a motion on the floor and a second. Any public comment, final comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. The motion carries. Dan, thank you for bringing that to our attention. 3G, Possible action to recommend to the Board of Supervisors submittal of a grant application to the Nevada Division of State Lands, Question 1, grant program for the for watershed improvements in the Golden Eagle Lane area. Rich.
Thank you. I'm going to go backwards on this one a little bit too. We came to the Open Space Advisory Committee and we requested the same recommendation to the to go to the board to put in for funds through the Carson Water Subconservancy District. We did do a funding request through CWSD that was submitted in early February. The grant request was for $125,000, and during our presentation at the Finance Committee, all of the people that were there looking for funding were told that there would be major reductions in the funding amount available. And that's a combination of more people applying for funds and larger funding requests than they've had in the past. And so within a couple of days of presenting at the Finance Committee, I was advised that we would be getting $75,000 towards the project versus $125,000, which I requested. Since then, I've been looking at ways to come up with a shortfall of funding to do the project, and I've worked with Ed James, who's the general manager for Carson Water Subconservancy District, and Charlie Donahue, who's the administrator for the Division of State Lands. And Mr. Donahue advised me that the old Question 1 grant program had approximately $80,000 left that were previously awarded to different people in the past, but it couldn't be spent. If you're familiar with that program, they had, I believe, spent the bulk of the funds through the Carson River portion of that funding. But since these folks could not execute their grant, $80,000 was made available. So after meeting with Ed and discussing the project and then taking folks from state lands out to the area, they determined that that funding would be a good source for that project. Ed James contacted me and told me that he is meeting with their regional water system steering committee, and they'll make a recommendation to his board of supervisors on the 20th at their next meeting. After that, he's already been told, or I've already been told by Ed, that the proposed recommendation is to fund Carson City with half of the amount and then Dayton Valley Conservation District with the other half. So that's why we're here today. We're seeking your support to take this to the Board of Supervisors. We might be a little bit light still in funding, but this still gives us the potential to do a couple phases of the project that we think will be beneficial. The Q1 grant process, I'm fairly familiar with. It's not that difficult to put in. So I think once we have that approval, we can get something turned in fairly quickly. I don't know at this point when they'll be asking for the grant requests. So I'll follow up with Ed and Charlie on that. But if there's any questions.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions from the committee? Public comment? Question? Okay, this is a possible action. Do we have a motion?
I move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors submittal of a grant application to the Nevada Division of State Lands Question 1 grant program for watershed improvements in the Golden Eagle Lane area.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I second it.
Seconded by Margie. Thank you. Any comment? Public comment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, Rich. Okay. Moving along here, 4A, activities, projects, and grants within the Carson River Corridor. And you can maybe hit the highlights, and if there are questions, Rich, we can take them from there.
Sure. One of the first events we're talking about is the Ambrose Carson River Natural Area Workday. We did this with River Wranglers as a project partner, as well as Carson High School. At that particular program, high school students
taught elementary school students different things about our environment, which include water quality testing, reseeding, monitoring invasive weeds, tree wrapping, wildlife habitat, and the Carson River watershed. The event was successful. It occurred on April 13th. I believe we had close to 175 kids out there that day. The Carson City Weed Coalition helped with the event. Daniel Anderson taught the kids how to identify certain invasive weeds and also how to monitor the different native vegetation out there. And I, on behalf of Carson City, taught the kids how to reseed certain areas. So very successful. Carson City Weed Coalition, I wanted to give an update on where we are. We are looking at spending the remaining fiscal year funds for noxious weed treatment. We have a Nevada Department of Agriculture grant, as well as funding through Carson Water Subconservancy District that has to be spent by the end of June. And so right now, Daniel Anderson's in the field. He's doing more mapping and identification. We'll be working with crews to treat from the Mexican Dam down to Carson River Canyon, several areas that we've identified in there. Some of the primary species that we're looking for is yellow star thistle, perennial pepperweed, and Russian knapweed and hoarycress. So there's plenty of that out there. We're also doing some cost share work with the Department of Prisons, working with Justin out there. His crew is going to be doing a large-scale treatment on their property, which is probably where the bulk of the seed source is coming. And just above that, on the county line, Douglas County is going to be working that section too. So we look to be fairly busy this summer. We're also going to be cost-sharing with Empire Ranch Golf Course, Silver Oak Golf Course, and Rafter PM Ranch. So just an update on where we are with that.
And just one of the things I wanted to clarify is Rich is talking about we're cost sharing. We supervise the Carson City Weed Coalition. So this is budget for the Weed Coalition. It's not open space funds.
And in the staff report, I included the CWSD grant. I actually covered that, I think, fairly well in the last staff report. So I wanted to discuss Muscle Power trash mob event that occurred in the third week in March. Staff requested Randy Gaw look at the East Silver Saddle Ranch area, which is along Sierra Vista Lane. And so Randy, along with 14 volunteers, focused on cleaning up from Lloyd's Bridge and working their way south. And as you can see in your staff report, a couple of pictures show they got quite a bit of debris. That's an area that does continue to be affected by illegal dumping, and staff has spent a lot of time doing cleanups in those areas.
I just wanted to say I was just down there about 3 weeks ago dropping off a friend who wanted to run the river, and I was at the southern end of it, and there was old car seats, like six or seven old car seats, not a couple. So Randy's already scheduled the next couple, I think, of trash mobs, but I think we need to move south again and do that area.
And I have another grant update. Staff worked with Carson Water Subconservancy District to submit a grant through the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, and this is for noxious weed and treatment. Carson Water Subconservancy District did get their full award for that grant. So what that does is it gives, instead of $15,000 for noxious weed treatment, it doubles that to $30,000. This is just for 1 year. But one of the primary components that we're looking at doing with this seed source is a little bit less treatment and more reseeding. So we'll be providing updates in the future on that. Silver Saddle Ranch, we've been working consistently on maintenance projects on the ranch. One of the activities is we're looking at pruning dead or potential hazard snags that are over our fence line and over our trails. There's one area on the ranch that Dan Graytek mentioned, that's considered a rehabilitation habitat area. There's a couple fences down there that are in need of repair, so we're going to be working on that in the future. And they're continually cleaning up around the Red House and some of the other outbuildings, removing debris and materials. There's a couple events that we'd like to highlight. April 23rd is the Escape from Prison Hill Half Marathon and 10K running events. April 27th through May 1st is the Sheriff's Office Mounted Unit Training. And then May 21st is the Friends of Silver Saddle Ranch Open House. That's all I have.
Thanks, Rich. That covers the Carson River portion. Any comments from the committee? Margie.
I have one comment, and I'm going to be sounding like a smart aleck biologist, but on the first one, the Ambrose Carson River Natural Area Workday, when you talk about some of the activities that you did, were you really working with microinvertebrates or were you working with macroinvertebrates? Just want to correct for the record. Thank you.
Typo. Thanks.
We're going to let that one go. Any other comments from the committee? Any public comments? Okay, let's move into other open space areas. Rich?
Okay, thank you. We're talking about Ash Canyon. In 2012, the Open Space Division received the first round of 319 grant funding through NDP. And with that, an Ash Canyon maintenance and erosion control plan was finalized. And for the last, I believe, 3, maybe 4 years, the city has continued to go back to NDEP for the same amount of funding so that we can implement some of those erosion control techniques identified in the plan. This year, we have received an additional $10,000, and our goals with this funding are to put to rest or rehabilitate 2 non-sustainable roads. That's the bulk of the work. We also want to do a fall planting and reseeding of those areas, hopefully as a volunteer work day. And maybe that's something that we can work with Muscle Power on. But one of the key components to this is the Ash Canyon road maintenance that occurs annually. And we use that funding that's dedicated to it to work as cash match on this grant. We anticipate that we'll get the road maintenance done prior to the Memorial Day weekend and the Epic Rides mountain bike event scheduled for June 17th through the 19th. We want to work with NDF. We've met with their staff about growing specific seed stock for fall to be planted on that project. And we're hoping that maybe they'll throw in a donation as well. Still working on that. Our fuels management project is underway. I'm sure most of you noticed in the paper that the sheep were delivered behind Greenhouse Garden on April 7th, and it was my first time watching that. It was pretty exciting. But there's 800 sheep and 1,100 lambs, and they're working their way south to north. They're going to focus on the low properties that are closer to the residential areas, and then they'll transition to the higher ground, the forest group, the U.S. Forest Service allotment. At this time, we anticipate they'll be out there about 6 weeks. We have another Muscle Power Trash Mob event coming up. So this one's unique because we're discussing a weed pull. This weed pull is scheduled for Saturday, July, May 16th, and it'll be from 8 a.m. to noon, and it'll be at the Horse Creek Ranch.
Okay. Yep, sorry. Yep, the typo in there again. July, May. So the correct date is July, yes.
But we're going to be targeting bull thistle on this weed pull, and we are looking for additional folks that want to participate. If they do, we have limited access up there with vehicles, so we'd have to ride from the bottom of Kings Canyon up. So if anyone's interested, please let us know. And the last thing that we're discussing is the Cool Canyon education outreach. We continue to work with Julie Coop, who's the honors biology teacher at Carson High School. And this year, students will be coming out this spring. They'll be doing their monitoring on their line transects. They're also going to be helping us look for any Russia knapweed that's on site. And so the monitoring is going to determine if our reseeding efforts have been effective and if our treatment efforts on the Russian knapweed have been effective. Staff has gone to Julie's class and taught how to do line transect monitoring and also weed identification. And so this event is scheduled for tomorrow and Wednesday. We'll be working out there with the kids. This grant only goes through the end of this year, so we have one more group that we will be working with in the fall. There is one more thing that I wanted to add that I forgot about on a staff report, but staff's also participating in Farm Days this year. That event's going to be April 21st and 22nd. That'll be at the Fuji Park Pavilion, and Carson City Weed Coalition will have an invasive weed display, and the Carson City Open Space Department will have a targeted grazing fuels management display. So you're welcome to swing by.
Thank you, Rich. Any questions or comments for Rich? Any public comment? Okay, thank you. That's a non-action item. 4C, we have a little notice in here. Ann, did you want to talk about retirements?
The notice in your packet is an invite to the retirements of both Scott Fairbrook, our deputy director, and Roger Mullendorf, our director. And Scott retired already. His last day was on Thursday. Well, not officially. His work day was last Thursday, but now he's on using some annual leave until his final day. And Roger is not with us tonight because he's down in Louisiana with his wife and visiting some of the family down there. So I guess we won't see him at another open space meeting. His last work day is May 31st. And the job announcement, and so even though Scott retired first and Roger was second, the way that city decided to fill both these positions is the director's position was flown first. The announcement closed on April 7th. There were more than 50 applicants. Calls were made last week to six folks to join us for interviews that will take place on the 25th of this month. The hope is a new director will come in prior to Roger's last day, and there will be a week overlap for the introductions. And then that new director can hire his or her deputy. And all of you are invited to the retirement party.
There was no flyer in my packet.
Okay. Anything else at this point, Ann or Rich?
For the whole agenda? Yes, I would like to add one thing. A few months ago, I believe it came down from the city manager's office that they will have a requirement for all committee members to attend a training on the open meeting law, probably staff as well. And so the first meeting that is scheduled is May 16th, which is our regular third Monday. It's not a special meeting. It will be called a workshop because it doesn't need to be filmed necessarily. But May 16th, currently in this room at 5:30, and all four of our committees will be invited. If you cannot make it on May 16th, there will be another date yet to be determined.
And that's the
correct. And the DEA's office is estimating about a half hour.
Now, how often are we required to do that? Jason Woodbury did one here a year ago, year and a half ago, that I attended.
I think it's every year, so we're going to be asking everyone attend on one of the two sessions.
Okay, one of them is May 16th. And the other one is when?
We haven't planned the second date yet.
Okay.
Currently, it's right here in the Sierra room.
Okay. Some of us need more training than others, I guess. Okay, member announcements and requests for information. Committee members, any thoughts, ideas, comments? Future agenda items, any items at this point, Ann, that you want to discuss?
Not necessarily. We have talked about the site development plan for Silver Saddle. With the new director coming on, I look forward to that opportunity because it's most likely we'll have to develop an RFP and seek consultants to help us through that process. So it's not something that will happen fast, but I hope it's done right.
Okay, thank you. Are there any public comments? It's nice to see three of you sticking out this long. All right. Anything more from staff?
Nothing more from staff.
Okay. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
I move that we adjourn this meeting.
Okay. Does that one need a second? Motion to adjourn?
No.
No. Thank you, Iris. It's nice to hear from you. Okay, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you very much.